And if people want to find out more about this, it's there are these workshops happening Friday night and
the talks on Friday and the workshops on Saturday.
The talk on Friday night, and go to Facebook.
Well, go to Brown Paper Tickets.
Brown Paper Tickets,
and just type in a search for Earth and Spirit Council.
Earth and Spirit Council, okay, and or also Facebook, Earth and Spirit Council. But I want to let listeners know you're tuned to, and thank you so much, Salvatore, for being on the phone with us, and thank you, Linda. Salvatore Gerancelli, who spent over 20 years and with the Lakota Sioux and wrote a book, A Man Among the Helpers. He'll be here this Friday and Saturday. You're tuned to KBOO Portland, Political Perspectives. Linda Rudnick of the Earth and Spirit Council is also here with us, and I'm Stephanie Potter, and thanks for Tammy for her great engineering, and thank you for listening.
And don't forget to support KBOO.
Yes.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
This is KBOO, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at 10 o'clock. Chris Andre will be hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. We got Flashpoints at 10:15 featuring Max Blumenthal speaking on the 51-day war, ruin, and resistance in Gaza. And at 11 o'clock, we got the food show. But coming up, we're going to hear a small short segment from TUC Radio that features a talk by Professor Ricardo Winkelmann on the melting of Antarctica. Stay tuned.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Ricarda Winkelmann, The Melting of Antarctica. A fairly unknown scientist, by limiting U.S. standards, took the limelight in major media in the U.S. in September 2015. The New York Times, and also Democracy Now!, quoted her this way: "To be blunt, if we burn it all, we melt it all," said Ricarda Winkelmann, the lead author of a paper entitled "Combustion of Available Fossil Fuel Resources Sufficient to Eliminate the Antarctic Ice Sheet." It was published Friday, September 11, in the journal Science Advances. Winkelmann is junior professor of climate system analysis at the prestigious Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. Her research areas are anthropogenic climate change, tipping elements, Antarctic ice dynamics, and sea level rise. The New York Times summed up the article, quote, "Burning all the world's deposits of coal, oil, and natural gas would raise the temperature enough to melt the entire ice sheet covering Antarctica, driving the level of the sea up by more than 160 feet, scientists reported Friday. In a major surprise to the scientists, they found that half the melting could occur in as little as 1,000 years, causing the ocean to rise by about a foot per decade, roughly 10 times the rate at which it is rising now. Such a pace would almost certainly throw human society into chaos, forcing a rapid retreat from the world's coastal cities. The rest of the Earth's land ice would melt along with Antarctica, and warming ocean waters would expand, so that the total rise of the sea would likely exceed 200 feet. The scientists said, "A sea level rise of 200 feet would put almost all of Florida, much of Louisiana and Texas, the entire east coast of the United States, large parts of Britain, much of the European plain, and huge parts of coastal Asia underwater. The cities lost would include Miami, New Orleans, Houston, Washington, New York, Amsterdam, Stockholm, London, Paris, Berlin, Venice, Buenos Aires, Beijing, Shanghai, Sydney, Rome, and Tokyo. End quote from the New York Times. The writer, Justin Gillis, refers to the article, Combustion of Available Fossil Fuels Sufficient to Eliminate the Antarctic Ice Sheet. It was published on September 11, 2015 in the journal Science Advances. As for Ricarda Winkelmann, this is just the last of a series of efforts to convince her fellow scientists and really all of us to take the problem seriously. And in a moment, you will hear from her directly. Here's the first-hand introduction to Ricarda Winkelmann, the junior professor of climate system analysis at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. Who is she? From 2013 to 14, Ricarda Winkelmann was visiting scientist at the Carnegie Institution for Science at Stanford. Before that, she was a member of the International Max Planck Research School on Earth System Modeling. From 2010 to 11, she participated in an expedition to Antarctica on the research vessel Polar Stern. Right after getting her degree in mathematics in 2008, she joined climate research as visiting scientist at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Only 6 years later, she earned her PhD in physics, summa cum laude, at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. She's an inspiration for women in science and for youth. She was born in 1985. The Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research near Berlin, Germany, is dedicated to exploring crucial scientific questions in the fields of climate impact and sustainable development. The Institute played a role in the shift to renewable energy in Germany. Here's Ricarda Winkelmann, recorded at the Our Common Future Under Climate Change conference in Paris. She gave a presentation on early warning for thresholds and tipping points in the Earth system to the plenary session on July 8, 2015.
We're very concerned with the impact of gradual climate change on nature and humans, and rightly so. The roughly 1 degree warming we've experienced so far has already caused observable changes in the Earth system. The last decade has been the warmest ever recorded. Mountain glaciers are declining, the Arctic sea ice cover is shrinking, and we just heard that next to the impacts on ecosystem, this also entails other risks, significant risks. Extreme events occur more often, sea levels rising, food security is negatively impacted. And these are just examples of impacts that have been observed so far. The Working Group 2 report of the last IPCC clearly states that in recent decades, changes in climate have caused impacts on natural and human systems on all continents and across the oceans. It also clearly states that with future warming, these impacts, or the likelihood of severe pervasive impacts, is going to increase. But in addition to these observed and expected impacts of gradual climate change, we need to think beyond that. We need to embrace the possibility that in a 5 degree warmer world, which is basically what we're heading to under business as usually, we are reorganizing the climate system. And the reason for that is that parts of the climate system respond in highly nonlinear ways. These are the so-called tipping elements in the climate system. A tipping point occurs when a small change in forcing leads to a strongly nonlinear response. And that leads to qualitative change in that particular dynamics. The response might be reversible or not. The state might be monostable or there might be multistable states. But in addition to these different characteristics of tipping elements, it's important to note that we cannot expect these parts of the climate system to respond in a smooth and gradual way. There are several of such tipping elements in the climate system. Here you see a number of candidates. They concern biome loss, they concern cryospheric changes, they concern changes in the large-scale circulations of the ocean in the atmosphere. And human-induced climate change can basically push these past their critical threshold. Now, as became alarmingly evident last May, tipping is not just a theoretical possibility. It is reality. What you see here are the glaciers of the Amundsen Basin in West Antarctica that are currently undergoing irreversible retreat. They have been observed to speed up for the past decades, but what became clear just last year is that they have retreated into the deep valleys behind them, meaning that they're now undergoing irreversible retreat, and there's basically nothing that can stop the ice loss from this particular region. That will lead to global sea level rise of roughly a meter. It's still unclear how fast this can happen, but it is clear that it is going to happen. And it is also clear that with increased global temperatures, the likelihood of such events increases as well. This was called a new era of irreversible climate change. And you can easily imagine that if more than 300,000 gigatons of ice are dumped into the ocean, that will certainly have significant impacts on the ocean as well. Here you see a sketch of the thermohaline circulation. It's density gravity gradient driven, so basically driven by changes in temperature and changes in salinity. And it can come to a halt, or collapse, as we say, when in the North Atlantic there's a significant freshwater influx, for instance from the Greenland ice sheet, or if there's a change in temperature. Now, I don't want to look at projections of when this collapse of the thermohaline circulation might happen in the future. It's really difficult to predict these tipping points. Instead, I want to ask another important question, and that question is, what if? So what if the Atlantic thermohaline circulation did collapse? What would be the consequences? We would surely see those consequences all around the globe. They reach from disturbances in the ecosystem in the Atlantic Ocean, over changes in the Indian monsoon system, to a reduction in oceanic carbon uptake. So these are just a number of these impacts of a collapse of the Atlantic thermohaline circulation. As I said earlier, a collapse of the thermohaline circulation is certainly impacted by a collapse of the Greenland ice sheet. The Greenland ice sheet is another tipping element of the climate system, and pushing the Greenland ice sheet across its tipping point basically means that it's going to melt down entirely. The mechanism behind this is really easy to understand. The mechanism basically means that if you lower the surface elevation of the Greenland ice sheet, it will warm, and that warming will lead to additional melting, and then in turn lead to more lowering of the surface elevation. So this is a self-enforcing feedback that basically drives that meltdown of the Greenland ice sheet. If it did melt down entirely, sea level would rise by 7 meters globally. And the threshold for this to happen has been estimated to be between 0.8 and 3.2 degrees of additional global warming. Now, this chain of events is really just one example that is to show that there are feedbacks between these tipping elements in the climate system. For the three that I just mentioned, the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets and the thermohaline circulation, this could be the chain of events and the important processes at work. Tipping of Greenland means freshwater input in the North Atlantic. That in turn will lead to a weakening of the thermohaline circulation. That will lead to Southern Ocean warming, and that will certainly influence the ice loss from Antarctica. Also, Greenland tipping means sea level rise, as we just saw. 7 meters of sea level rise globally, but especially on the southern hemisphere due to the gravitational effect. And these two sort of processes together mean that tipping of Greenland will certainly influence the tipping point of Antarctica. So what can we conclude from this? I think we need to think about business as usual in a different sense as well. Business as usual, that means a 5-degree warming by the end of this century. 5 degrees of warming, that's also the difference between an ice age and an interglacial. And clearly, during the last ice age, Earth looked very different from the planet that we live in today. So 5-degree warmer planet will probably also look very different. And we can look at some of these changes with models. Here you see the long-term response of the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheet. And as you can see, this is no surprise since we just saw that the tipping point for Greenland occurs between 1 and 3 degrees above pre-industrial. So the Greenland ice sheet would become essentially ice-free with business as usual. And the Antarctic ice sheet would also significantly lose mass. So these are just some of the long-term changes. And we need to consider that, well, since the Earth system is so highly connected, that there are other changes that might be caused by the tipping of these specific elements that you see here on the map. Now let's put this into context. What you see here is the temperature evolution since the last glacial maximum. So 20,000 years of, well, basically the history of temperature. And on the right, you see the future scenarios. You see the RCP scenarios and the temperature evolution that goes with it. And there's one striking thing that immediately comes to mind, and that is what we're doing right now with the climate system is a really drastic change. Actually, we're changing the planet much faster than what happened between the last ice age and today. And if we now look at what is, well, our best estimates of when different elements, different tipping elements might cross their critical threshold. And it's important to state again that it's very, very difficult to predict these tipping elements. So there's a lot of uncertainty that goes along with these ranges. But this is, to our current knowledge, the best estimate. So this is a compilation of these different thresholds. And as you can see, it makes sense to have the 2-degree guardrail. Actually, 2 degrees is not a really safe margin yet, because it means that a number of these tipping elements, a number of these critical thresholds would already be crossed. And under business as usual, you can see that most of these tipping elements would probably, well, flipped over. So I think business as usual on the long term needs to be regarded as a reorganization of the climate system. And I think it's important that we think beyond the gradual change and the impacts that go along with it. Thank you very much.
That was Ricarda Winkelmann, recorded in Paris on July 8, 2015, at the plenary session of the Our Common Future Under Climate Change conference. She spoke on early warning for thresholds and tipping points in the Earth system. She's junior professor of climate system analysis at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. In a subsequent session at this Paris conference on July 8, she had the opportunity to explain in more detail the tipping points in the Antarctic ice sheet.
Our next speaker will be Ricarda Winkelmann from Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research.
Thank you very much. I'd first like to thank the conveners for inviting me here to talk about one of the tipping elements, that is the Antarctic ice sheet. What we know is that sea level is rising currently. We also know, and all evidence points to that, that sea level will continue to rise throughout the century and beyond. And if we want to think about long-term sea level rise, we really need to look at the Antarctic ice sheet. I think the Antarctic ice sheet can rightfully be called the sea level giant. The total sea level potential, meaning that if you take the entire ice mass and distribute it over the ocean, then this is how much sea level would rise globally. So for the West Antarctic ice sheet, sea level would rise by 5 meters, and for the East Antarctic ice sheet, by even the tenfold, 50 meters of global sea level rise. The hotspots that have actually drawn our attention in the past, and in the recent past, this is the Amundsen Basin, which I will talk about, a bit more about later, the Southern Antarctic Peninsula, and also two regions in the Eastern Arctic Ice Sheet, which are the Totten Glacier and the Wilkes Basin. What they all have in common is that they might become or have become unstable. And the reason for this is the so-called marine ice sheet instability. This is a very simple mechanism. We have our ice sheet. It's sitting on ground mainly below sea level. That's one of the very important conditions for this instability to exist. And the ice sheet is basically pushed by its own gravity towards the ocean and drains into ice shelves. And the separation between the sheet and the shelf is the so-called grounding line. Now, if we imagine that the grounding line is somewhat pushed towards the center of the ice sheet, so land inwards, then this is what triggers the instability. We know that the flux across the grounding line is somewhat decided by the ice thickness of the ice sheet at the grounding line, meaning that if the grounding line retreats towards the center, then we have a higher ice thickness. That means more ice flux, which in turn will push the grounding line further inland, which will lead to higher ice thickness, more ice flux. So this is a self-enforcing feedback that can lead to unstable retreat of the grounding line, and thereby ice loss, and thereby sea level rise. Now, as I said earlier, the tipping of the Antarctic ice sheet, or particular regions of the Antarctic ice sheet, is not just a theoretical possibility. It has become reality. The Amundsen Basin in West Antarctica has likely tipped. Glaciers draining the Amundsen Basin in West Antarctica include the fastest glacier in Antarctica altogether. And as you can see, they have sped up in the recent years, especially in the past decades, has been observed for a number of years now. And now they have basically hit that point of no return where the glacier, the grounding line, has moved past that bump in the topography. So it has moved past that place where now it's on a retrograde slope, and there's basically no mountain behind that, or no hill, or nothing that can stop it until the entire basin is drained out of ice. So this will lead to global sea level rise of about 1 meter. It's still unclear how fast this can happen, but it's clear that this is going to happen, and this is why it has been called a new era of irreversible climate change. A second region that has caught our attention is the Antarctic Peninsula. And there's some debate whether or not this region might also have tipped recently. And there's some discussion whether this is caused by dynamic thinning or maybe through snowfall effects. But it is possible that the peninsula has tipped also, or could tip in the future, because it also fulfills these two conditions that you need for the marine ice sheet instability. The ice is rounded below sea level, and that the bedrock is sloping land inward. And there are also regions in the eastern Arctic ice sheet. To remind you, the eastern Arctic ice sheet altogether holds enough ice to raise global sea level by 50 meters. So we've seen that there are also regions in the eastern Arctic ice sheet that could become unstable through the same kind of mechanism that we saw before. This is one particular region in eastern Antarctica. It's the largest marine ice basin that's fully connected by subglacial troughs. And it is grounded below sea level, and the bedrock is sloping land inwards. So this is a candidate for the marine ice sheet instability. Currently, there's still an ice plug, we call it, so a small fraction of ice that's kind of working as a plug to hinder the ice from unstoppable retreat. So currently, the Wilkes Basin is still protected, but that might change in the future. Another thing that's really striking is that sea level takes a very, very long time. In this particular case, we look at timescales of tens of thousands of years. That's important to keep in mind because it also means that we need to look at sea level in terms of commitment. And now I want to add the other sea level components to the equation that are the Greenland ice sheet, the thermal expansion, and the mountain glaciers. And we can look at the sea level commitment over the next 2,000 years for all of these components together. And we see that it's a quite linear dependence, meaning that the sea level commitment rises with 2.3 meters per degree of warming. So we can already know today what we're committing the planet to in the future in terms of sea level rise on the very long term. What does this mean? 2.3 meters per degree of warming. That, of course, affects us and future generations. More than half of the world population right now live near coastlines. There's a lot of infrastructure and also a lot of cultural heritage that is right at the coastlines. And in addition to that, we can look at how the territories of the countries are affected. And what's quite striking is that if we look at the spaces that we live in right now, our current warming has already committed us to a loss of about 0.7% of the total land area. In a 3-degree world, this would rise up to 1.1% of land area. In a 3-degree world, 3 to 12 countries will lose half of their land territory. In the 3-degree world, 25 to 36% of the countries will lose more than 10% of their territory. And about 7% of the global population is now living in regions that in a 3-degree world would be below sea level. So 2,000 years, that sounds like a very, very long time. But we can also look at this in terms of what is happening within the century. So here you see for the two RCP scenarios, which I'm sure you've seen in many of the other talks, the commitment, especially for North America, for the US cities. And as you can see, in both scenarios, Miami is actually already committed at the beginning of this century through our greenhouse gas emissions and thereby the warming that follows. This has been picked up quite a lot, including by Barack Obama. And I just think it's important to also think about these long-term changes and to think of sea level rise in terms of commitment. Thank you very much.
That was a portion of a talk by Ricarda Winkelmann, recorded at the Conference on Our Common Future Under Climate Change in Paris on July 8, 2015. She spoke on Landscapes of Our Common Future. She's Junior Professor of Climate System Analysis at the prestigious Potsdam Institute in Germany. Even though her September 2015 article, co-authored with Anders Leverman, Andy Ridgewell, and Ken Caldera, entitled Combustion of Available Fossil Fuel Resources is Sufficient to Eliminate the Antarctic Ice Sheet, propelled her to sudden fame, their warning also seems to have been instantly forgotten. This radio program puts out her name and the work of the team and repeats the quote by her that impressed the New York Times. If we burn it all, we melt it all. It remains to be seen if the warning had an effect and if we stop digging our own grave. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is TUC@TUCradio.org. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week, $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs Director. This is a salary full-time position paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the BOO. That's at kboo.fm on the homepage, right-hand side under News from the BOO. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
This week on Religion for Life, my guest is Mary Flum Peterson. She's the author of White Dresses, a memoir of love and secrets, mothers and daughters.
Where people, I think, feel safer because they've read my book, they feel like, okay, you know, I can talk about this. You know, this person's going to understand because she's laid bare her soul.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up at the top of the hour. It's 9:59 in just a minute. Air Cascadia today. Chris Andre's guest is whistleblower Colleen Rowley. And then at 10:15, we have Flashpoints today, a feature which is Max Blumenthal speaking on the 51-day war, ruin and resistance in Gaza. And at 11 o'clock, Chris Siegel hosts The Food Show with guest Rosanna Pansino, author of The Nerdy Nummies Cookbook, and Jesus Guillen, Oregon's only Latino winemaker. And once again, we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, now is a great time to become one. Just go to kboo.fm/give to find out about our matching grant. And here we go on to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, November 18th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, today our guest is no less than Colleen Rowley, the most extraordinary whistleblower of them all, in that it was, of course, Rowley's May 2002 memo to the FBI director exposed some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures. She was named one of Time magazine's Persons of the Year in 2002. She wrote to the FBI director again in February of 2003 with some hard questions about the reliability of the evidence being adduced to justify the impending invasion of Iraq. She now warned of terror.